Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. One of my favorite people, and somebody who knows, really goes deep. There are so few, honestly, Derek, journalists out there that really just go in for it and do not stop and do not give up. And Derek Burrows is one of those people. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you for having me back, Mel. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I appreciate it because I read your story on the Finders, and I believe that many, many people either have never heard of it or have heard of it and look the other way. And I had been thinking for a really long time that I wanted you to come on and just kind of walk people through this story. It kind of does start people thinking maybe they, maybe some of what they've been told are conspiracy theories or all of that actually has basis. And I think it's a good place to start. So I'm just going to turn it over to you and be a listener as much as my audience is, and take it away on the Finders.
I appreciate that, Mel. Thank you. And, you know, you're correct that this is a topic that not a lot of people, even in the conspiracy realism research community, just it's kind of actually become, I think, more of a almost like a folk tale in some ways. Yeah. It's like there's I remember when I first started hearing about it, 2018, maybe 2017. On like some really obscure online forum, conspiracy forums and blogs, or in like, there's a few videos you can find on YouTube, but they're like 3 or 4 minute summaries of this story of the Finders. And so I kind of heard about it here and there. And then this was 2018. I had just finished doing a documentary on Jeffrey Epstein at that time. I just visited Jeffrey Epstein's house and released a documentary called Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein. And I was actually in Florida, in Palm Beach, where Epstein's house was. And I was just finishing that up. And on the way home back to Texas, I had thought about the Finders story. And I don't really remember if I had already decided it was going to be my next investigation, but I had started to dig into that rabbit hole. And I found out that one of the former members, one of the founding members, the right-hand man of the founder of the Finders, Marion Petty, this man, his name is Robert Terrell, that he was actually maybe a mile away from where I was at in Florida. And so just, you know, some really random events brought me to meet him, and I got to sit down and interview him and ask him a bunch of questions about the Finders. And that led to my documentary, which I released in early 2019, called Who Will Find What the Finders Hide. Everybody can watch it at theconsciousresistance.com/thefinders, all one word. And it's about an hour long. And yeah, it was just one of the things that, as I said, as I started to look more into it, I was constantly blown away with the amount of evidence that exists in this story. And I'll outline what the story is, and then I'm also going to share my screen. I have a bunch of documents and some newspaper clippings that I actually haven't shared publicly before, that just to show people like the extent, because the Finders story, even though you've never heard of it now, when it first went down in 1987, February 1987, so, you know, 40 years ago, it was all over the international press, the Washington Post, the Associated Press. International media was reporting that two men, well-dressed men in suits, yeah, were caught with, yeah, six disheveled, hungry, bug-bitten kids in a van in Tallahassee, Florida. And these men were connected to a cult that was being called the Finders. And this basically set off an investigation in Tallahassee, Florida, where the men were arrested, back to some apartments in Washington, D.C., which were, you know, involved with the Finders, to a farm in Virginia. And so you had the Virginia police investigating them. You had the customs agency, U.S. Customs, investigating them because of claims of alleged trafficking of children across borders. Right. You had the Florida police, and then the Washington Metro Police in D.C. So you had four different departments that we know of. And then, of course, the FBI and the CIA end up getting involved later. So when it first goes down, though, that was the story, is these men in, you know, suits with in a van with six kids were arrested. And then, of course, the story gets weirder, where they start to describe that the men had, not only were the kids looking in pretty bad shape, the men had essentially early, they had a type of computer, I think it's called a TRS-80 or TSR-80, early computer, but more specifically, they had the technology to essentially be doing Ethernet, like landline, wow, not what, wow, we would call the internet today, but some form of communication. And so once these men were arrested in Tallahassee, Florida, the Washington Metro Police contacted the Florida police and said, the Tallahassee police and said, we're investigating this group called the Finders. Do you think there's cause for going further? And the police initially said, yes, we do think there's something going on here. These men are connected to some other people. And so that gave the Washington Metro Police and the Customs, U.S. Customs, the opportunity to do a raid on these two different properties that were connected to the Finders. One was an apartment home, one was a warehouse. And then, as I mentioned, there was also the farm in Virginia. And so this is where the story gets really interesting. And because it involves so many different law enforcement agencies, we actually have quite a bit of documentation telling the story of the Finders. That's what makes it pretty unique as well. So you had the Washington Metro Police going on the raid of the warehouse, and you had the U.S. Customs. And it, with the Customs was a man named Ramon Martinez, who was a part of the U.S. Customs Force. And he was there. He wrote a detailed report. He said in his words, in his report, that they saw pictures of naked children there. They saw detailed instructions on purchasing children. They there was some a couple of people on the site, including on the warehouse, at the warehouse, including a Chinese person. And they said that they had books about how to speak Chinese. They had a lot of different passports. They had maps where they were clearly documenting travel that was taking place all over the world with this whoever was there. They said that also there was notes that made it clear that somebody had communicated with the folks at the warehouse and said, hey, somebody's coming, and a bunch of people had scattered. And again, there was more evidence of them having computer technology before most people, the average consumer, had it. And you know, passports and details on financial deals and all kinds of stuff. Like, so it went from being who is this weird, quirky people to like, this seems to be some type of operation, right? And so Ramon Martinez writes this all up in his customs report. And as I'm going to show in some of the pictures in a moment, they collected all this evidence. You can see two bags of it. And then Ramon Martinez files his report and basically waits to hear, you know, what's going to happen next and to hear back from Washington Metro and see what's going on. And he claimed that he kept asking to see the evidence again, that he wanted to go over it and like, just look at it again. And that he kept being put off and put off and put off. And that eventually he claims that he went back to the Washington Metro Police Department and was told that, he didn't say who told him this, but somebody from the department told him that it had become an CIA internal matter, and that it was no longer, the investigation had basically been closed. And so he starts to raise a bunch of noise from within the Department of Homeland Security. You know, the public, of course, doesn't know about this at the time. What the public hears is that there's these men that have been arrested. They are connected to a cult. And definitely there was claims that they were a satanic cult, that they were trafficking kids. Like, this made the news everywhere. And of course, it has been now dismissed as the 1980s satanic panic, you know, claiming that it's not real. In fact, I did a video a few years ago kind of breaking down some propaganda from Vice, where Vice wrote an article essentially trying to say that the Finders story was like the proto QAnon, that it was a fake story, but it made people believe in this and that. And they did a horrible job, of course, of actually looking at the details and what I'm going to share with everybody today, which is that the documents themselves say that this was a group that was involved in U.S. intelligence. And, you know, there's so many layers here. But to kind of narrow it down, those were the main three claims made against the Finders: that they were trafficking children, that they were connected to intelligence networks, and that they were satanic. And I'll say right off the bat, based off my research of investigating them for the last 5 years and producing this documentary and having interviewed Robert Terrell, one of the founders of the group, two times, I think the strongest claims out of those three are the intelligence connections. Those are absolutely documented, clear. Like, this is some type of, or it was. And the thing to remember is we're calling it the Finders, and that may have been what they called themselves to some degree at some point, but they also apparently had different names. There's some reports by my friend John Brisson, who talks about them coming out of another group called the Crazies, and some of these kind of guru cult groups. But what made the Finders different is that they weren't like some kind of hippie cult doing drugs and partying. They were actually kind of very square in that way. They were more about like mission oriented. And so they were led by a group named, by a man named Marion Petty, who graduated from Naval Air Force, Naval Intelligence, excuse me, from Naval Intelligence. So he's got an intelligence background. He allegedly was a chauffeur after that. He retired, and he says he chauffeured for all these really powerful people in the military. Claimed, though, he was never involved with the military again. And this process is typically referred to as a sheep dipping, when the military kind of officially cuts ties with somebody, but then they're actually reassigned a different position, behind the scenes. And I think that's what Marion Petty was doing, or also sometimes known as a NOC, a non-official undercover. I don't think he ever really truly severed his connection to the intelligence community, but he claimed that he did, and that in his older age he just wanted to get people together, and he was teaching them that life was a game. So they called him the game caller, and these people would come to him, and he would say, "Okay, go to San Francisco and bring me back a bar of gold, or bring me back a jacket with the letter F on it." Just random, seemingly random things, tasks that these people would go out and do. And they weren't like dumb people. These were like highly educated people that he convinced, as well as Robert Terrell, the right-hand man who claimed he shared a toothbrush with Marion Petty. They voluntarily put in their life savings into the community bank that he kind of got them all to do.
Right.
And in fact, in my interview with Robert Terrell, this guy sounded like he was like a, you know, was a kind of normal 1960s guy living with a wife and a house. And then he met Marion Petty, and then he divorced his wife and gave his life savings over to the finders and became like the right-hand man. So that's kind of what they expected, but he convinced them. It's like, yeah, just let go of all possessions, and then just let's play games, let's do these things. I think that was sort of the outer ring of like the cover story. But I think that those who were more deeply ingrained, and definitely Marion Petty himself, realized that there was other things going on. Many of the members of the finders that we know of, they have jobs, and some of them are still alive and they're still around. They have jobs as investigators, as journalists, as different things that allow them to travel the world and kind of play this role, essentially. But I think they're truly probably working for the CIA or some other intelligence asset. But so my point here is that Marion Petty, though, the very founder of this group, was connected to intelligence. So we have very strong claims, and I'm going to get into some more in a bit as well. The second claim being that they were trafficking children. I think that there is good circumstantial evidence of this. So the incidents with the kids that the two men got caught with, these were one of them. One of the men was related to one or two of the kids, but their mothers were elsewhere. And there is definitely some evidence of that, as I'm going to talk about in a moment, of child abuse. And this is in the documents, the Tallahassee police documents themselves, saying the young girl, really graphic stuff we can get into if we need to. I think there's documented evidence of that, and that in what Ramon Martinez writing down, saying there was directions on purchasing children from China and purchasing like orders of kids and stuff. There's something to that that was never fully investigated. And then the third claim about there being satanic activity, I actually think in this particular case that the available evidence is the weakest on this claim. That doesn't mean there might be evidence that we haven't found, or that has been erased, or was destroyed, because there definitely was examples of evidence being destroyed in this case. But some of the evidence that has been claimed as satanic in this
Right.
particular case was that they found a circle of stones behind the house. And that could have been just a fire pit or something like that. It's things like that. And then also the finders, and this isn't necessarily the way I would go about it, but I think that it doesn't necessarily qualify as satanic in my view. But there was pictures of the kids at the finder's warehouse and at their apartment, of two of the young kids, and they were all wearing white hoods or sheets or
Oh.
whatever, which they claimed was to protect them from the splattering of blood, because they were teaching these kids how to kill a goat, and how to, skin your animal and take care of it, right? Which I think in one level we understand, like trying to teach skills and like that, but it does seem a little odd, So there's pictures of that. There's pictures of the kids like in the white robes, and they found blood and all that. So depending on how you interpret that, maybe you could say that that was a satanic ritual. But as far as like hard evidence that I personally feel strong with, I think that's kind of the weakest one out of the three. But again, strong evidence of actual physical evidence of child abuse, and then clear evidence of intelligence connection. So those are kind of the broader claims. Now, and I'll just wrap up the main story here, and then we can get into some of the evidence. But so the men, they're arrested. As I said, it sets off this investigation in all these places. Ramon Martinez, the customs agent, he writes this report. He goes back and is told it's a CIA matter and it's over. And then within a week, all the mainstream media just basically starts reporting that, whoops, it was a big mistake, nothing to see here. And then within, I think they spent 30 or 40 days in county jail, the two men. And then were eventually let go. And that was kind of the end of the story. But behind the scenes, Ramon Martinez, that customs agent, he never stopped trying to like raise alarms and saying, hey, I know what I saw. I saw pictures of naked children. I saw, you know, instructions on buying children. And he's like, where did all that evidence go? Nobody's providing me access to it. And basically what appears to have happened is that they destroyed his career. Somebody destroyed his career from within the DHS and or U.S. Customs at the time. Because he started to get complaints about him. I think the complaint, one of them, it says something to the effect of he puts his nose in places it doesn't belong, and they start really coming after him. And he said like it was directly related to this. So he gets kind of pushed out, and his career is essentially destroyed. He's fired, and they do everything they can to make him seem like some disgruntled agent. Former agent. But he kept talking about it, and there was two representatives. I think a state rep and maybe a state senator. I can't remember their position, but I know one of them was Charlie Rose and then another gentleman that his name escapes me in the early 90s that actually were listening to Ramon Martinez. And in 1993, they actually started a congressional investigation, and it became news again. All of a sudden, news that the Department of Justice is going to investigate. And this was, again, mainstream, right, which sounds kind of crazy to even imagine the headline. Department of Justice investigating whether or not the CIA covered up for this cult. And so it became a big thing. Ramon Martinez was speaking out publicly. These two different politicians, and probably more, I tried to find them. They're all unfortunately dead now. But they were just saying there's something going on here. We need to get to the bottom of it. Surprise, surprise. They do this investigation and they claim there's nothing to see here. And that's kind of the end of it. 1993, essentially, until my documentary, which came out in 2019. So there had been, like I said, some small reports here and there, but nobody had really dug as deep as I believe I have to not only get the documentation, what are the documents that, you know, that exist now 30 years after the fact. And I did try to track down as many of the people in this story, the various police officers, right, some of the journalists that were writing about it at the time, and Ramon Martinez himself, to find out if they're, for one, are they still alive? And then can I find them? Will they talk about any of it? And Ramon Martinez really is still the key piece of this puzzle. And he is alive. I did find him. And in the making of my documentary, and I talk about this in the documentary, I felt like it would be incomplete if I didn't make an effort to go talk to him directly. And so I started to email him. And at first he was very open. I could tell he was paranoid. He was sketched out, which I can understand. He's now like in his 70s. He's retired on the East Coast and he teaches Tai Chi. And I think he's just kind of probably moved on with his life, even though he knows what he knows. And so at first he agreed to talk to me, no recording, but he said he would speak to me. And then within a day or two, he kind of just, his whole mood flipped and was just like, I'm not going to talk to anybody, you know, and he said something like, I have no hope that anyone will ever be held accountable for what I know happened. And he said that other journalists over the years had tried to reach out to him only to make him look crazy or to misrepresent his story or to not publish it at all. So he was very, you know, very reluctant to talk to me. Nevertheless, I was able to track him down, and I tracked down to where I went to the place that he teaches Tai Chi, and I flew across the country to go meet him uninvited. But I felt like it was worth making the effort to just go up and say, hey, look, like no cameras, nothing.
Yeah, this
like,
is who I am. Right.
This is who I am. Like, and to really, like I said, he holds the key to this story. He's still alive. He is still living, and he knows what he saw and could be right now trying to blow the whistle on it and bring whoever's still alive that was involved in these decisions accountable. And some of them still are alive. And so I went there to go meet him. And as soon as I saw him walking out, I recognized him, even though he had aged a little bit from the oldest picture I found. And I went up and introduced myself to him. And as soon as he heard my name and recognized me from the email, right away, he was just like, F off, just get away from me, get away from me. And I was, you know, of course, I respected his space. And I said, look, you can blow this whole thing open. Like, you need to speak up. We really need you. Like, I'm just trying to encourage, you know, just trying to say that. And he was pretty much just like, get the hell away from me. Don't talk to me. And after that, you know, I don't want to harass somebody. I don't want to stalk somebody. So
We
he's
also
a
don't
free
know what
citizen.
happened to him. You know, I mean, the truth is, like you
Exactly.
said, that could have gone on for decades. They're probably watching him. I mean, they're watching both of us, obviously, right now at this
I
point.
think that was his concern. I mean, and because I will say this, Mel, that definitely when I was knee deep in the finder's research, I had a few different incidents, some windows that I hadn't opened myself, a couple of different things started to happen as I dove into this, and I became more aware that whoever was keeping tabs on this particular operation is still around. Because the weirdest thing of all is, as I started to make the Finders documentary, it was under the recommendation of some of my listeners that they said, look, if you're going to go into this really kind of deep thing, you probably should make your research public as you do it. So I ended up doing, and you can find this on the Conscious Resistance under our Finders category. The first 7 videos I did, which actually led to my documentary, were just me looking at different pieces of this puzzle bit by bit. And as I was going along, it was just getting weirder and weirder. And honestly, I don't know how to say it other than like I felt like I was being guided to this information. I'm a pretty good researcher, but things were just, everything was lining up. And I was able to get, find names of some of the members of the Finders, which I have been able to confirm is an accurate list. And some of the stuff that you can find in those first 7 videos has all been deleted from the internet
Oh,
and
wow.
has been wiped. Yeah, at this point, it's very hard to find some of this stuff. And in fact, just kind of weird story here. The name for my documentary, Who Will Find What the Finders Hide, it comes out of one of those videos. As I was going down the rabbit hole, I ended up finding just there's a blog on Yahoo, and this one I think is still up. And it's like a just a travel blog or something, but it's this family or this couple describing how they met this other couple, and they seemed really interesting, but also kind of a little bit off. And they got to meet them and hang out with them a couple times, and they decided to look them up. And then they realized this couple's name had been linked to the Finders, that they had been listed as members of the Finders, and decided to kind of put some distance between these people. And that blog led me to a random comment that was clearly some sort of cipher. It looked like a random set of letters and numbers. And long story short, you solve that cipher, it leads to a tweet. You go to that tweet, there's another cipher there, and that leads to this YouTube video. After following a couple trails like this, I came across these set of videos, and again, these are all have been deleted. I played some of them on my old my recordings of it, but they felt like truly like some mind control MK Ultra type videos, where it was like just flashing letters and like people and scenes, and like your trigger is green, your color is just real trippy stuff. And underneath one of those, like after this whole puzzle,
Oh my
and
God.
it leads to a YouTube channel. The name of the YouTube channel was a member of the Finders. His name's Stuart Silverman. And then there's another cipher, and that cipher said, "Who will find what the Finders hide?" And that, so I kind of chose that name just to sort of like wink to whoever was out there. Like it just seemed like such a weird, random thing to kind of be like a troll or something, because it was so obscure that there's not many people who were
That
even
can't be a
going down that rabbit
troll.
hole.
That's somebody who
Yeah.
knew, and there's other people out there. You know, it's funny. I remember when I saw it. I was during the early, probably before the no, probably during the lockdown is when I saw your documentary. And I, you know, I'm good friends with Kathy O'Brien, and I called her. I'm like, "Do you ever hear this?" She's like, "Of course." And I said, "You know, like, what do you mean?" She goes, "That's this is not, you know, this is, you know, this is what." This is all about. And I kept saying, what are you talking about? And then, you know, obviously everyone knows about the allegations about what was going on in DC, what was going on with Comet Pizza and all that. And so people were, I think, kind of conflating all of this. Also, your amazing work on Jeffrey Epstein was before a lot of people. I had known two of the girls from the 2008 case. So what though it also is pointing to is that this is a much bigger problem than people want to admit. And that this was obviously an intelligence operation. And I think the real question and the real obvious part is they're still trying to cover it up. So if they're still trying to cover it up, is it still going on? And what it appears, at least what I got from your documentary, and then looking into myself, and then Kathy led me to a whole bunch of stuff that was happening at Boys Town. And this whole other story that's just horrendous about these young boys that, you know, many people have seen those videos and what happened to those guys. And it's just like, I mean, how big does it go? And a lot of it is connected, it appears, to MK Ultra and kind of, you know, Kathy was sold at 3 years old to the CIA. So, I mean,
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
That's why, like, I think it's important not to get totally caught up on the name, the Finders. This particular group, this sect, was led by a man named Marion Petty. They did it sometimes call themselves the Finders. They claimed that was because they were good at finding things. So if you needed to find a person or get some research, they would collect finders' fees. But there is many people who suspect there's a deeper,
there's many networks that are connected, and that there's people that can
control them. One single network of, and Marion Petty was just one man coming out of Naval Intelligence with a lot of different connections. I mean, going back to power players in World War II. I mean, this guy was not just a random person, but he is somebody that very little is known about his life. We have bits and pieces here and there. But yeah, the Finders would have been, I think, one of the many networks that somebody like a Kathy O'Brien would have been passed along to or experienced. And again, I think they created this sort of outer circle of quirky, running around, playing games, the game caller, and it's this and that. And some people maybe are playing a role or pieces of the puzzle that they don't even understand what they're a part of. They're just, you know, kind of being blind followers for whatever reason. And so that's kind of how he operated this cult, the Finders cult. And as I said, this story had pretty much died down until,
but that it was ever out there is amazing. You know what I mean? Because there were so many. And then also, I think a lot of people connect this and other things, Kathy's stuff and everything, also to Colonel Aquino. So that I think when the satanic thing comes in and the military, people go off in all different directions, and it's very hard to do what you did, which is actually follow the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I wanted to see which of these claims are accurate. I mean, we've talked about it before. I've done since the Finders and Epstein, the Utah ritual abuse case, which does involve people being abused, where the individuals are specifically accused of abusing people while saying, like, this is for you, Lucifer, type of things like that. We don't have that sort of evidence in the Finders case, but we do have evidence of the intelligence connection. So if I could, I want to start to share my screen here and show you guys some of this evidence, because you don't have to take my word for it. Let's go ahead and just get into the documents themselves. I opened up a number of different out of my personal files here. Can you see that, Mel?
Yes, I do.
Cool. Okay. So what we're looking at here, this is page 67 of, well, let me preface this by saying this, that after I released my documentary, which was early 2019, the really crazy thing about this, Mel, is that later that year, by October 2019, the FBI started to do document dumps related to the Finders. And all in all, in the last 4 years, they've done 4 document dumps. So you can go to the FBI's vault and you search the Finders, and you'll see these 4 different document dumps that have taken place since October 2019. So I don't know if that was already in the process. I'm not necessarily trying to take credit, but it's just coincidental that I dropped this documentary in early 2019. A lot more people are asking questions about the Finders. By the fall, the FBI drops this first document dump, just total, no announcement, just all of a sudden it's just there. And this first one, that's what we're looking at, is 326 pages. And it's, you know, it's a lot of stuff that I had already seen because, you know, I was already researching this and I had already obtained some of the police documents, but there definitely were some new material. And what we're looking at here, this particular section is.
And did you find that all roads led to DC, or was it all, because there was many different locations?
There is a few locations, and with the Finders, so I mean, I didn't mention this earlier, but the story that the two men told, and we don't know if this was fake or if this is real, but I could imagine it was real, or that at least elements of it might have been real. The two men, when they were arrested with the kids, they told them that they were taking them to a school for brilliant children in Mexico. The Finders had also been reported at in places as far west as San Francisco and in other places. So I think they did operate networks around the country. They were mostly based, though, in D.C. and in Virginia. And then interesting, you mentioned Comet Pizza and some of the whole Pizzagate stuff. There, I haven't done it myself, but I've had a researcher reach out to me and just kind of share, like, hey, coincidentally, look at the address, because we have the address in DC where the Finders warehouse was, and look at where that's in relation to Comet Ping Pong. You know, it's just, it's 30 years after the fact, but it's just kind of interesting coincidence that it definitely was in the similar space. And we know DC is a swamp and that this stuff is unfortunately.
And if there is some kind of connection, well, I mean, that whole area, I've seen all those too, the maps there. And I know about the tunnels and all this stuff, but at the end of the day, it does appear that these operations, maybe they go underground, but they seem to continue and be handed off. So I think the Finders, just from what I've done, I think the Finders is just one piece, and that they when one goes down and underground, it pops up somewhere else. And honestly, right now, the reason I wanted to do this show right now is because what I'm hearing, I have a friend who does these documentaries, 26 seconds, about child and human trafficking, sex trafficking, what's going on at our border, and also what's going on with the migration coming from the Middle East. There is a huge, huge issue right now that everyone's ignoring, and it's on a level of either our military or the highest CIA or the government, but there is a problem right now. And I think the Finders case shows you a lot of things that, you know, this is not new, A, and B, the way that they've handled the Finders. And like you said, I didn't know about the document drop after your documentary came out. A lot of what they do, and people are realizing this now, obviously you have for a long time, but they do things like that so that you decide that it's over. The person that's invested, that's the watching it. Like when they just did this fake drop of like the Epstein list, and I was like, And I had on Johnny Bedmore, and we were like, oh, okay, so now they're going to act like, well, we gave you everything we have, so now it's over. So that's what leads me to believe that. So that's why I wanted to revisit this and have my audience walk through it with you. So go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I do think you're right that sometimes they start dropping documents so people believe that's all there is available. And there are even more reports that they still haven't released, though, as well. So we definitely have more than what they're hiding. I want to just point out a couple of things here. So this is, again, the Washington, D.C. Metro Police, the Metropolitan Police Department, April 13th, 1987. This is part of their Finders investigation. And there's just a couple of random things I want to point out. So they interviewed 21 former Finders concerning their involvement in the organization. They stated that the organization began as an alternative lifestyle in the 1960s, and many of them became disenchanted with the quasi-military order under the direct supervision of Redacted, which was probably Marion Petty, the former intelligence agent. And then it said that many of the former members stated that they feared retribution from the Finders organization. And then they don't name who, but it says in the case of someone, she needed police intervention to stop the harassment of the Finders. And in this case, they don't say who, then Redacted was burned down and remains an open arson. So there's talking about like the Finders members going after former members. Then it says in the blank case, members of the Finders attempted to infiltrate huge redaction in the United States. In general, all members of the Finders who left the group felt that harm would come to them if they spoke out against Redacted or his organization. So I point that out to say that, you know, I've had people ask why has nobody spoken out about this since then? Because some of the children are still alive that, as far as we know, that were involved in this original thing. And I think that points to one potential reason that people clearly have been threatened and harassed in the past. And maybe the message was just sent out like, shut up and move on with your life or whatever. And, you know, so to anybody who's skeptical of that, just kind of keep that in mind. Now, here's the main thing. This is the summary of the officer. His name's redacted, so we don't know who wrote this, but this is April 13th, 1987. And that this is, to me, the strongest piece of police data that we have. This is after them investigating them. So by April, remember, the original incident happened in February of 1987. He says, quote, "It is this writer's belief that the Finders organization is and has been utilized by the CIA as a disinformation service, spreading non-essential, non-critical information to various organizations throughout the U.S. and overseas. This group, to the most part, is made up of overeducated non-achievers who lack the inborn initiative to succeed on their own. Therefore, they fell in with a charismatic leader who gave them direction and self-importance. For the most part of this organization, individually is harmless. However, when directed and monitored by a controlling factor, they are capable of destructive and illegal activities. As in any cult structure, the main drive is for the group and the individual values and ideology is lost. Therefore, when a member is asked to perform a task that heretofore may have been objectionable, he or she performs this mission for the good of the group. As to the abuse of the children, I do not think that child abuse was a planned tactic of the group, but as in any cross-section of the society, sick and demented subjects belong to the cult as well. I do believe that the shaping of the children is a planned experiment of this group, as in the case of the Nazis, they strove for a perfect society, thereby in their own way tried to form a group of children and ultimately adults that did not suffer from the ills of normal society. Lastly, I do not feel that the Finders have been disbanded as reported by their leaders, but instead, as reported in their master plan, have appeared to disband to prevent further detection by law enforcement or social service officials. I firmly believe that this group should be monitored in a general sense, and if further developments occur, they should be noted.
Wow. Wowie. That's what I'm saying.
So that's,
yeah.
That's like, I mean, even the first line there, and again, this is just the writer's belief, right? But it's coming from a police document from... this isn't just a random officer writing on a blog. This is an official police report that was formerly previously, as you can see on the bottom, labeled secret for a number of years. And it's in the branch of domestic security. So this is an official report. And he starts off, or he or she starts off by saying they are more than likely have been utilized by the CIA as a disinformation service spreading non-essential, non-critical information.
And it looks like it's around the same time period where a lot of that stuff was happening in Ojai and a lot of the CIA experimenting on people with LSD and MLK Ultra and a lot of of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's definitely some overlap between some of the other MK operations that people are more familiar with. And I do think that there may have been some elements of that. We do know that Ramon Martinez also described in his report whenever they raided the warehouse that there was cameras set up and what he said looked like some sort of room where they were filming things. Now that could have just been, unfortunately, child pornography or something like that. But there could also be some of that, like, you know, sometimes there's the programming aspect, like I said earlier, with even just the fact that they're getting everybody who joins to kind of give over their life savings to the,
right.
I think they called it the information bank or something like that, or the community bank. That's all part of the sort of control process as well.
Yeah, now, and it reminds me a little too of the Montauk experiment. People think that's a conspiracy theory too, but it's also like they want kids that are superior. Like what they did there, from what I can see, is actually true. And not surprising, because Kathy has stories like that too, about like the games and trying to make these kids like have supernatural powers. And I mean, this is all very, very scary. And that he's saying here, it probably went underground, is probably what happened.
I think so. And that's why I thought it was so important. So I'm going to show you just a few more newspaper clippings. These are from, I will say, if you're a researcher out there using the websites like newspaper.com and some of those others that are these really old archives, there are quite a bit of things you can find there. And I was able to go back and find some original reporting following one reference to another, to find all these old articles about the Finders. And some of them include pictures that haven't been seen for decades. This one is coming from a paper in Virginia. And this is from 1987. It says police search home, find nothing. And you can just kind of see it's like a attic, a top room in a cabin reportedly belonging to the Finders cult, littered with books, garments, diapers, and furniture. Okay, so that's like a little at the top of this cabin right there, police search home. And you see here they mention Officer Scott Hunt, a Tallahassee Police Department spokesman. And I'm going to come back to him in just a moment, because there's a lot of different pieces of this puzzle. So far I've mentioned that Officer Ramon Martinez, he said that there was, you know, evidence of child abuse, and that basically that information got covered up, the investigation got shut down. And, you know, you would think, were there any other officers, any other whistleblowers? And Scott Hunt is one of these people. And actually, here's the first article about him. This is coming from the Tallahassee Democrat from 1993, and it's titled "Cover-Up Charge Aimed at Cult with Local Ties." Two of the Finders cult members were arrested in 1987, but child abuse charges were dismissed. Now someone says it's a cover-up, a CIA cover-up, and they're showing a picture. Sergeant Scott Hunt with the Tallahassee Police, he was involved in the investigation following the arrest of the two men. Here's the whole article. You can see this is just a clipping of the article from 1987, so people know this is a real article. I found things like that. So I started to look for him. This is another one. TPD officers still hoping for answers. FBI agents have also interviewed Tallahassee Police Department Sergeant Scott Hunt. Hunt was the department spokesman who told the reporters the Finders were a satanic cult suspected of sexual child abuse. He said he based his allegation on information given to him by the Washington police. One minute, the Washington Metro Police Department in Washington was assisting in the child abuse investigation, he said. The next minute, he was mysteriously frozen out by Washington police. And this is a quote from Scott Hunt in an interview in 1993. Quote, I've never witnessed a situation in which one law enforcement agency has cut the legs out from another. I can only speculate, but it is my belief that someone above the DC police shut down the investigation. He said he and retiring Chief Mel Tucker have been invited to, this is the representative, U.S. Representative Charlie Rose of North Carolina, and Tom Lewis to testify in Washington. No dates for hearings have been set yet. But so, you know, you can see like Ramon Martinez was trying to speak out. This officer from Tallahassee, who was there when the men were first arrested and said that there was clearly evidence of something going on, that that was being covered up. This is another article. This is from the Washington Post. Officials describe cult rituals and child abuse case. And here, the reason I show this is one of the only known pictures that I know of. And it's, of course, kind of old and grainy. This is Detective Jim Bradley, who I believe was probably involved in the cover-up. He was with the Metro Police Department carrying the bags of evidence that Ramon Martinez talked about and wrote about in his report. We can't see any of them clear enough to see what they are, but presumably these are the instructions on buying children and naked pictures of children and all the other things that Ramon Martinez described. But this would probably be the last time that those bags of evidence were ever seen by the public. If they exist anymore, they're being hidden somewhere. And if they don't exist, it's because they were destroyed before anybody could get to them. So that is also, I think, a pretty good find, being able to just show like, look, here's the actual, these were the bags, like that they did exist. And this is another article from the Washington Post, 1987. Finding truth about finders proves to be no simple matter. Information about finders commune is elusive. And this is one of the only known pictures of Marion Petty, the naval intelligence officer who founded the group right there. And of course, that's not a very good picture. But yeah, so you could see there was reporting all over the media about this when it was happening. And it's just, you know, as far as they're concerned, yeah, the story is that it was just satanic panic and Vice News can just write about it and laugh about it now. There's nothing to worry about. But as I told Robert Terrell, the right-hand man of the Finders founder, when I interviewed him for the second time after my documentary came out, because he wasn't happy, he didn't like my conclusions, I asked him, well, look, I can hear you. You know, you seem like a reasonable enough guy and you're telling me this didn't happen and you weren't involved with it. But can you square that with what these police documents say? You know, maybe the documents are wrong, but I'm not making things up. You know, right. He tried to make it seem like I'm just a conspiracy theorist and I was being an irresponsible journalist and all this stuff. And I personally thought he was being kind of manipulative. He was like, look at me. Do I look like a kidnapper? I'm like, I don't know what it looks
Okay, BTK but, killer. Is there a look?
Exactly. And then the thing, though, is, again, I do carry myself and consider myself to be an actual journalist. So I did the due diligence of going to interview this person before I even made my documentary, including his comments in the documentary, even though I think he's lying and that the documents tell a different story. And then after the fact, going back to visit with him to hear him critique me and tell me why I was wrong and still confront him with the facts of like, look, I hear what you're saying, but I can't change what these documents say. Now, you could say the documents were wrong or something like that. But, you know, the other thing is the Tallahassee, the first medical investigator that went through the children said that the oldest girl, Mary, I believe is her name, that she had evidence of her vagina being penetrated. One of the boys had like, you know, was having diarrhea because of signs of sodomy, you know, and anal penetration. Like there was, these things were found by the medical report. I didn't make that up. That's not some conspiracy on the internet. That's in the documents, you know, and the document I just showed you guys, that one itself says that they were likely a CIA disinformation service at the least. You know, that's what is in that document. That doesn't mean that was where things ended, because Ramon Martinez pointed at child trafficking, pointed at like this other evidence, and they clearly were traveling. The other thing is, and I don't think I've mentioned this, that the members of the Finders also had passports to countries that at that time in 1987, like for example, China, Russia, which at that time relations were even more strained. You couldn't just go to these countries and like Vietnam and some other countries. Right. They had essentially diplomatic access to all over the world. Like at least some of the members did. So it clearly shows that they had financial backing and that they had technology and they were able to communicate. And you know, they found other evidence that like members of the Finders, whenever the cops were coming to raid the places, that they were able to communicate through, you know, some sort of hardline internet or something. They had sent messages saying, hey, the house, you know, they're on the way to the house and things like that. So they were clearly organized in this fashion. And so is it that hard to believe that they would scatter to the wind like this one officer suspected and right. rebrand themselves as just journalists and whatever, and kind of move on with their lives and maybe just be thankful that they got away with whatever they got away with. Meanwhile, Ramon Martinez, this officer, his career was ruined and he has just kind of retired. And I do believe Scott Hunt, Officer Scott Hunt, is still alive. I haven't been able to get in touch with him or find him, but I do believe he is still alive in Florida, possibly a real estate agent. And I'm trying to talk to him. I still haven't given up on this story. In fact, I'll be, as part of the Pyramid of Power, my documentary series, our next episode, or one of the upcoming episodes, is going to be about the pedo class. And it's going to be kind of revisiting my work on the finders.
Well, this is why I wanted to have you on. This is why I wanted to have you on, because your work, you know, the way that you do your work is how old school journalists did it before the shift. And what you're talking about too is also these children, a big part of what happens, since I do know a couple people really well who did suffer fully, I believe, satanic ritual abuse, but certainly Kathy MK Ultra, I've been to her house many times. It's very different than interviewing her as it is to sit there and talk about it. And her daughter as well is a victim. But I have to say, a lot of these people have been used in operations like she was. So the other part of this is these kids, or the kids in Montauk, or the kids that were all with Kathy, was with all kids too. You know, were these kids, are they now in positions of power? Are they, you know, journalists? Are they, you know, so for me, I just think that this is a part of a way bigger picture. And now that, you know, not that you haven't been reporting on it for two decades, but now that people are starting to actually see the truth about the CIA and start to see the truth about these operations and how little value some of these lives, especially of children that go into these programs, how they're treated. It just says to me, like, all these big pictures, I brought it up with, and you haven't looked at it yet. I knew about it years ago, but I also, you covered Epstein a lot. And I know two of the girls from the original case, and this is not new, but they all seem to be connected or protected by intelligence. I mean, there is not a doubt yes. that is happening. And I think that it's really important for people to start to really look at it on a different level, because this is never going to, this, look, we have, and you reported a lot, as does Whitney Webb and Last American Vagabond, and a lot of the people you work with a lot. You know, we have a serious problem where we have a fifth column in this country that is very, very dangerous and elusive and gets away with this over and over. And one of the big themes that comes up time and again, all the way back to the 40s, if not before, are children. And nobody wants to believe this. Nobody wants to think it's real. How much evidence from the original, from what you guys were digging up about Epstein, that is totally real? Like, where did those people go? Where did those models go? Where are these people? And then they get, you know, memory hold. And I just feel like I when I reached out to you, I said, I think people have to understand that this has been going on for decades, and then it goes away, and then it pops up somewhere else, and then they try to push it away. And then I saw, that's why when I reached out to you, it was that night that I was looking at the Epstein thing, and I'm like, they just want us to be like, okay, it's over.
Yeah, I definitely think that the people behind these networks would rather us, two things. They'd rather us argue about, is it just a Democrat thing or a right-wing thing or a Republican thing? I've seen people fall into that trap of just making assumptions that it's only the Democrats that are involved in these kind of networks. But if you look at the Franklin scandal and you right. look at others, you can find examples of so-called conservatives or Republicans participating in this stuff too. So I think that's one thing, like getting beyond the sort of divisiveness about this issue and just seeing it for following where the truth is. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. That's what I tried to do with the finders. If yeah. I had looked into the finders and turned out that it was just a bunch of, you know, speculation and, you know, wild claims, then I would have reported that. But it had turned out to be a lot deeper than I ever realized it could be. And I do want to say that I think that this is one of the, I think I might have mentioned this earlier, one of the most documented examples of this sort of situation. And I'm going to just share my screen again real quick, because I want to make sure your audience knows you can get all of my work on the finders. This is my documentary, theconsciousresistance.com/thefinders. But I also want to show you, I've got articles about this. Police documents reveal 30-year cover-up of child abuse. I did a podcast specifically about Scott Hunt that I mentioned, called On the Hunt. You can find this all under the Finders tab. And then this is my 2021 interview with Toby Terrell, where he is critical of me and I let him say what he has to say and I ask him some hard questions. But lastly, I want to point out that in 2021, I released this Finders archive on my website, and I'll make sure you get this link, Mel, so everybody can get this. You can go ahead and this video is just to me explaining what it's about, but you can just go down here and it says download the Finders Cold Archive. Wow. Give that a click.
Wow.
And that's going to open up to this mega folder that I created, and it's totally for free. You can download it. And the reason I did this again, like people had warned me, make your research public just in case something went wrong. And so I was doing those public videos when I first started. I did a similar thing here. So you can go through these folders. You can, the first one is just my documentary, and you can look through there. Here's the audio and video, and look at the research documents. This is my interview with Toby Terrell. You can see every law enforcement document, the Finders FBI document dump 2019 to 2020, the FBI files, the Tallahassee Police Department files. You can see newspaper clippings, all the ones I was showing you, and much more. You can see Ramon Martinez's whistleblower complaint. There's a lot of information in here. And the reason I put it out is because I think this needs to be out to the world. And in case anything ever happens to my work, because my YouTube channel did get deleted in 2020 after I launched this documentary, it actually had quite a few 100,000 views on YouTube before my channel got deleted. It's back on YouTube, but it's been totally shadow banned, and my channel's gone, but I did restart. So it has a lot less viewers. So every now and then I notice people are watching and they're like, why doesn't this documentary have way more views? So you can always find it on my website, but it is on YouTube if you want to share it there. But my point here is everything that I've put together and that I was sharing with you guys is available here for you to go through. And just get into this, find out for yourself. At the very least, even if you never look at it, download it to make sure that it doesn't disappear from the internet. Because the more people who download it, this information, that means that no matter whatever happens to me in my research, it'll always be out there in the public domain as it should be.
Yeah, you are one of the bravest people out there. I have to say also that the reason that this bothers me so much is that I believe that, you know, the use of children, because what you and I both know, my audience may or may not know, is that a lot of times this very traumatic sexual child abuse is part of programming. And we don't know at this point, but there's too many. I think about the Franklin scandal. I did want to also do something on that, because I think people have to understand that this happens over and over and over. And it's always our own intelligence agencies that shut these investigations down, and they never go to fruition. There was also that situation in Mexico. I think you covered it. I do want to go into the Utah story with you too. And the reason I do is because good people don't want to see this. And then it happens again a few years later. You'll see the Epstein thing, or you see, I guess right now, the Puff Daddy thing, or you see whatever, and you'll think these are isolated. I don't think they're isolated if they keep getting shut down by our own government and nobody ever finds out what happens to these kids. Nobody finds out. And knowing from some of them, you know, a lot of them don't make it past, but a lot of them are used in intelligence operations and experiments and all of that. And we have to start being honest with ourselves if it's ever going to end. To go there. What do you think when you were investigating the Epstein case, because you were on it very, very early, way before he was arrested the second time? Why do you think that they aligned for you, this case and that case, or at least made you think you wanted to go back and look into this, other than the obvious?
Well, you know, it's definitely not the most fun topic to be diving into. I mean, it gets dark and deep, but I guess I felt like a sense of duty, I guess, for a lack of better term, because I came into the Epstein research area in 2016 and I was focused on that. And like I said, I went to his house. I was able to just really do what I thought was some important work at the time and help more people learn about Epstein. That documentary also was going viral. It had almost 1 million views before YouTube deleted my channel. So it was getting traction. More people were learning about Epstein, of course, even before he became a household name. And I guess I sort of just took it like as a sign that I was in Florida and I happened to be miles away from where this Robert Terrell at the Finders was at. And then, like I said, when I came back, it kind of like, you know, the universe, God, whatever, made up my mind for me, because so many things started being put in front of me that I realized, like, okay, this information, it was just, I don't really know how to explain it other than like everywhere I looked, I was coming across new information. You know, I was digging and I was searching far and wide, but at the same time, I did get some information sent to me. And like I said, a lot of those details have been since deleted off, but they helped me do my research and lead to the next thing and the next thing and end up being able to produce what turned into a whole documentary. I didn't know if I was going to be able to do a documentary when I started. I just thought, I just finished Epstein. I'm being pulled in this direction. Let me see if I can apply my skills here and find out if there's more. Like I said, if I would have found nothing, I would have been happy to report, sorry guys, let me debunk this finders thing because there's really nothing here. But in fact, the further I went, the more and more evidence I found that I was just like, it's just like one of those things that's only confirming what you've already known. Like you said, Franklin scandal, Epstein, I obviously knew that this stuff happened, but it was like, how could this be so heavily documented and nobody even know that this happened?
Like, that's kind of what I was saying. That's why I feel like now or never, while we still have our voices, they're trying to get rid of them, you know, now or never, because they're using these kids. Like, remember all those pictures of like the models, the from the Midland Modeling Agency and all of those pictures and everything? They haunted me. Like, where are those people? Were not okay. And yet people act like it never, it's not real. It is real. Like these things are real. And somebody at the very highest level of our government, our intelligence agencies, the CIA, whoever, pushes these down, because these kids, some of them are probably, you know, skilled to be like Kathy and be spies that have, you know, you can turn her brain on and she spits out something that was programmed into her head over days. You know, they had that whole facility above Laurel Canyon. I used to go up there, and when I lived over there, and be like, I wonder if, you know, if there's anything here. I think Jared Leto owns it now, but they have this all over. And I think they're still doing this is my issue. If it was so honed, and, you know, Aquino was one of Kathy's abusers, and I know Robert Byrd, I mean, a lot of really high level people. And if I did not go to her house and really look into it, it would be still like, how can that be possible? But there's too much evidence available on that case as well. But I have to say, we have to start taking this seriously. We have a wide open border where there's kids walking around all over New York City that seem to have no parents. And that's just my experience there. And the American people have to understand a lot of this is probably being done, not just with our taxpayer dollars, but, you know, we don't know where they're going. We don't know if some of these people that seem to be demonic journalists are actually people that were, you know, trained and you know, people don't believe Bohemian Grove. They don't believe any of this stuff. And I just can't believe, I want to be at least one person out there that's saying, look at what Derek Burrows is putting out there. What do you know? Because like you said, some of these people are still alive and probably have lived in hiding their whole lives.
Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water? And the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.
I mentioned the name Stuart Silverstone. Of course, I just want to mention, like, before anybody goes out and does anything crazy, that everybody there, nobody there has been, we haven't found the concrete proof that shows any specific members of the Finders or former members of the Finders linking them to child abuse. But Stuart Silverstone was absolutely a member of the Finders. And if you start researching him, as well as a couple other names, you'll find their names in magazines. You'll find their names in just different online websites that promote themselves as like related to marketing, related to research and things of that sort. So they seem to have a quality or a skill set for that kind of thing that would be suited for journalists, would be suited for investigators, for people who are pretty well traveled, who have contacts all over the world. That's at least how they've promoted themselves. And I think that is part of their intelligence cover, that they have these connections, you know. But that's the people that I've seen that are still out there. And I have tried to contact, they don't seem interested in talking about this whole thing. They're still out there. So, I mean, and also the thing is, even the folks involved in the FBI, the CIA, of course, so many of those names are redacted in the police documents. Right. So it's not like we can point to and say, hey, this is the head of the FBI at this time, or the head of this division who made the choice to close the investigation, right? Because if so, we could go look and find those people. That's, are they still the alive? Let's question them in public. Yeah. Let's confront them. Let's, you know, try to get some information. Do they want to make any deathbed confessions? This sort of thing. But unfortunately, you know, yeah, they released hundreds of pages of finders documents over the last couple of years, but a lot of the names are still redacted. And as I was showing you, there's like whole sentences that are missing and redacted and in some of those sections. And I didn't show this earlier, but one of the sections of that same document I was showing you said that that neighbors in the West, in the Virginia farm, that neighbors had complained that they had heard kids screaming and crying some nights. And they found cages on the farm that were allegedly where they kept the kids in these cages and stuff like that. And that's in the documents too.
And that's so like the Franklin scandal. I mean, there's just things related to all of this. And like that's Franklin scandal. And then like the whole NXIVM thing came up and went away. And you know, it's just one after another. But there's always politicians attached. There's always some kind of DC angle. And it gets tamped down. And I understand this is the easiest place for people to go. And then like you brought up Vice, then these Daily Beast, Vice, whatever, that now Rolling Stone apparently is in on their same game. Then it's like, this is all not true. Then 6 months later, you see somebody arrested who was saying it's not true. It's just really tragic. And I think we have a very, very serious situation where we have young kids being trafficked all over America right now, right in plain sight. And people aren't taking the next step to say, you know, it is your responsibility to actually pay attention.
I agree. I definitely think that this is one of the darkest, deepest secrets there is, Mel. I think that this really, like I said earlier, it pervades political parties. It's not just the United States problem. It's not just a politics problem. It's obviously a Hollywood problem too. It's obviously also an academia problem, the media, so many other areas. It's not just one religion. It's the Southern Baptist. It's the Mormon Church. It's the Catholic Church. It's like, and we have to look at that. And this is, you know, what I'm going to be examining and this upcoming episode of the Pyramid of Power, just kind of asking the question of like, why is it that this one issue, this one topic is not discussed openly? And if you do bring it up outside of, say, referencing Epstein, like I guess now since Epstein has become mainstream, people can't dismiss
it. Yeah, but people don't believe. But people don't believe that Epstein had young kids. That whole part of the Epstein case has been totally ignored. And that's another thing.
That's just a one time. Like, okay, yeah, Epstein had that thing, but let's all
young girls who wanted to be models is how they pitched it, and people just buy it. Like Filthy Rich, you know, the James Patterson documentary.
You got the modeling industry. You got the modeling industry. The religion. You got politics. You got Hollywood. So this is an issue that I do think, and unfortunately, I think it is also a generational issue. I think that this abuse of children, you know, children have been one of the least protected classes of people for generations, you know, for millennia going back, you know, things have gotten kind of better in some ways in some parts of the world, but still, generally speaking, children are kind of seen as expendable in some cultures and in some ways, and they're often the least protected. And then, of course, with our really sick and twisted world in the United States, at least the United States government, the people who are often involved in protecting children, or at least pretending to protect children, are often the people who are involved in the abuse of children as well. Like it really is a sick situation like that.
Yeah, and anyone who tries to look into it, remember Nancy Sherman, anyone that tries to look into it, it mysteriously dies or something happens to them, plenty of journalists along the way. It's just, I think right now, and I want you please to come back after you do your next project, because what is happening at the border, I'm so sure that there are so many children that are being abused all over in every crevice of this country right now. And it's a giant operation of some sort. Not that it's not normally happening, but to have all these children that have no parents, and then the government actually says to our faces that they don't track them. They don't know where they're going. I had whistleblowers on my show that were working, and they had to get them out in 10 days, and they were handing them off to literally anyone. So, you know, you have to think in terms of, you know, this is our responsibility as human beings. And again, they're not just used for, it's not about sex a lot. A lot of it is about blackmail. A lot of it, some of these people are like literal, like Aleister Crowley, sex magic people, that there's a whole nother level to that craziness. It's just, it's a topic that I'm willing to talk about, and I know you're one of the best researchers that have gone here, but I hope you'll come back and continue. I encourage everyone to watch this documentary. I would also like to talk about the Utah case sometime soon as well and stay on this topic. If people aren't going to do it, fine. But if you are seeing people like children like I am that are out there and clearly are alone and vulnerable, and this is already our history, what do you think's happening now with how messed up things are? So Derek Brose, tell everyone again how they can find you and follow you and all that stuff. You're always doing amazing things. It's incredible.
Thank you so much, Mel. I appreciate you having me back on. My website is theconsciousresistance.com and the documentary is at theconsciousresistance.com/thefinders. I'll also send you, Mel, the link to the Finders Archive. I encourage everybody to download that. And that includes the documentary, the copy of the documentary, so you can have that for yourself. And I will definitely be happy to come back and talk about the Utah ritual abuse case. And, you know, I wish that we could end on a happier, more solutions focused note. But unfortunately, the reality is that this is one of those topics where there are no easy solutions. And one of the best things we can do is just continue to talk about it. And this is one of the things I realized after going through the Finders case and the Epstein case and the Utah case and reading some of these really disturbing reports that, you know, if I can't even read about it or talk about it, then what good am I doing? Because these people, these victims have had to live through some of these horrible things. And so the least we can do is try to bring the truth to light and spread that information. So thank you, Mel, for giving me a chance to do so.
Thank you. It's the most important thing in the world. And people have to understand it's real and you might not want to see it. But until we start taking it seriously, it's just going to keep happening. And then a story will pop up, then they'll pass it down and then it'll pop up again. So if people don't get aware, I know it's so hard and there are no easy solutions. But one solution is knowledge and recognizing that it's real. And that can maybe start to maybe expose more. But you've done amazing work. Thank you so much. And we'll have you back. And the links are below for Derek. And please go watch the documentary. Thank you so much, sir.
From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out Mel K Superfoods today. It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z Flu, Z Stack, and Z Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko is ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko.